accept the apology of Councillor Andrew Noon, will note that. And at this stage, I'd just like to say we've had a terrible tragedy in this country last Friday. Many people lost their lives, many people were injured, and it affected many communities throughout New Zealand. So I ask you all to stand for a moment of silence. Leave of absence, we've got no leave of absence. Attendance, we know the full code of people are here today to present the 6 month annual report or 6 month report, and we've also got two submitters. Welcome to you all, and also welcome to the media. Confirmation of the agenda. As I say, we've got a very busy day, so we need to keep moving through. And also, we've got iwi coming at 3 p.m. for a workshop with us. Conflict of interest, I've been advised of none. Public forum, we'll move straight on to that. We have Alana Ranges and Mary McFarlane. So if you'd like to come forward, ladies, sit down the end there. That's all right. Thank you for your interest in council affairs, and we're in your hands, Lana, and you're going to go through.
Okay, I'll introduce myself. My name's Lana Arangi. I've lived in Port Chalmers for 50 years. Previously, I was on the community board. I was the inaugural chairperson of Vision Port Chalmers. I have been the chairperson of State Highway 88 Beautification Trust. I was also on a trust to beautify down at Muscle Bay, which the Otago Regional Council at that time, Louise Rossen's time, gave $25,000 for a walkway by the sea. I have been involved in lots of community projects over the years. I am here not against Port Otago. I am very supportive of Port Otago. They have always opened their purses when I have walked in and asked for a community project. So I'd like to begin, if that's all right. I understand I've got 5 minutes. Sorry, just a wee bit nervous. Okay, this is about the noise, the effect on myself. I live at 10 Byrne Street, Port Chalmers. I look directly down on the port cranes and right out to the heads of the harbour, just a 10-minute walk down to the port itself. I am on heart medication. For the past months, on a Sunday and some Monday nights, the noise from the Rio ships have made it impossible to sleep. By Tuesday night, my sleep pattern has been disrupted, and I find it difficult to regain my sleep pattern, only for the cycle to repeat to the next Sunday. This is very detrimental to my health. I accept that the port company are trying to mitigate this problem, but have been told that it will be very hard to completely solve. My desired outcome would be to double glaze my bedroom windows. I didn't create the noise. Right, the second one is noise, history, the arts. Naomi Wilson, 2 Aurora Terrace, Port Chalmers, has had a long-standing unresolved issues with Port Otago. This dispute has been raised in numerous forums, including the land use process with Port Otago, applied for resource consent to complete the removal of the material from Flagstaff Hill. The issue is around noise and the long-term future of 2 Aurora Terrace, being Ralph Hotery's first studio. This residence sits beside the award-winning Hotery Garden. Ralph, of course, was one of New Zealand's most important artists. No progress has been made through these channels, and Miss Wilson does not want to sell her home, She wants to ensure that 2 Aurora Terrace remains in situ for the local and wider community, as it has significant art and cultural heritage value, nationally and internationally. News that the Port Otago plans to demolish a number of Port Otago-owned properties in and around Flagstaff Hill has once again brought this to the fore. Once Port Otago have completed their plans, 2 Aurora Terrace will be completely surrounded by port-owned land within the buffer zone, a truly unique situation. I attended a meeting with Kevin Windus, Miss Wilson and Desiree Mayhai, at which Kevin offered to buy her home. He would pay her $35,000 to acquire an option if she sold, but nothing for acoustic treatment. Imagine the front page news: Port Otago demolishes another of Ralph Hotu's studio. I hope that's not the plan. The desire outcome, this, because it's been long standing, because there's no trust with Naomi for the port company, and I think the port company have had a hard go with her, I believe it's time to have an independent arbitrator to work with both parties to settle these long-standing issues once and for all, cost to be paid by Port Otago. Just because somebody is difficult does not mean you walk away. The issues have been made bad by the port company. They should be made good by the port company. The last final thing, and you'll be glad to get rid of me, I'm sure, the Waterfront Industries Commission building. I wish to draw your attention to page 16, item B, visual characteristics, aesthetics, from Port Otago Limited's Port Environment Plan for Port Chalmers. Retain and maintain the buildings of historical importance. I understand from both Bruce Malcolm, former branch president, and Phil Adams, president of the Watersiders Union, there's also a letter from Phil Adams in this here. I understand from both of them there was no negotiation, no concessions, the building is coming down, that's it. I understand why the port company want that land, and I accept that, but you always work with people and you always give them a way. They walk out the door with a win-win. There's no win-win in this. It beggars belief that Port Otago would wipe away its own workers' history. The history of the Watersiders is part of our history, the people of Port Chalmers. In 1975, the Watersiders Union spearheaded the fight for Otago to have the container port at Port Chalmers. Now is the time to repay our commitment to Otago's port and honour our history. You will see that I've included papers from both Bruce Malcolm and Phil Adams for you to read. Please be fair. This is not about them and us, it's about us. You are our Otago Regional Council. The desired outcome, keep the facade of the building. Thank you.
Thank you, Lana. Now we'll have questions. If there's questions for clarification, please.
Thank you very much for coming along today. I'm not fully up to play with what's happening in terms of the Flagstaff land. Do you know what Port Otago are intending to put there?
Well, they have to take down the big part of the hill because it's unstable. They're probably taking down those houses because the residents that have been renting off them have been given eviction notices, and they've been told they're being pulled down because they can't treat them. So they'll pull them down and that will leave Naomi by herself. I would hate to think that that would be a pressure point for her to go as well. She'll never leave. She loves that place. She's kept it exactly like Ralph had it and has improved on it. Spent a lot of money trying to resolve the noise issue, but it's really hard to do. And I think there was a resource consent and a suggestion that the port company retrospectively paid some money. I think that would have gone a long way to have made things a bit better. She is extremely difficult to work for, to work with. I'm not working for her. But I'm here because I was a great friend of Ralph's. I was at Ralph and Mary's wedding. My husband was as well. We loved Ralph, and Naomi loved Ralph. Lots of people loved Ralph, and we'd like to see that building stay. On Naomi's death, she does want to set up a trust that would run it to have an artist in residency.
About the double glazing, can you just take me through that again?
Treatment done to your house, you have to be in a zone, like a red zone or a yellow zone. I'm completely out of it. I'm miles up the hill. So, you know, and I'm a widow, I'm on my own. I looked after my husband who had dementia for years and a rest home. That costs a lot of money. And to double glaze my bedroom windows, I'm not asking for the whole house. I just want to be able to sleep at night. Now, I know that the Otago Regional Council say, oh, we have a hands-off thing on operations. Well, my personal belief is, and tell me if I'm wrong, that we elect the regional councils, the people of Otago, and you own the port company. You get the directors for the port company, and they sort of tell Port Otago what their expectation is, and they have a chief executive and all the rest of it. I still believe you have a responsibility to us, especially the people of Port Chalmers, because we do have the outcome of any expansion. We lose our recreation areas. We do have the trucks on the road, and that's fine. As a port, we all accept that. But this noise is loud, and long-standing, nasty, unresolved issues are just not good for people's mental health.
No further questions?
Thank you. The first thing I'd like to say is I endorse everything that Lana said, and as Ralph's widow, we had many conversations about his last studio on observation point, and it needs to be hands off that studio. It must be kept. He worked on it. He's made the kitchen. He's done a lot of the interior of it. Feels much like that panel feels like inside. Other councillors might not realise that Observation Point, about half a kilometre, was taken away in the early 90s. The toe of the hill was taken away and pushed into the sea to reclaim Back Beach and reclaim Boiler Point. So that's why it's unstable now, because it's already been mutilated. So Ralph's, on that headland was Willowbank, and Ralph's another studio, his second studio, which was the stable of Willowbank, the stately home where the Antarctic explorers stayed before they went down to Antarctica. So it's a very historic area for the port. So, you know, we acknowledge that Port Otago operations are important, but we still have this historic place up there that needs to be retained. Now, when the former CEO became CEO of Port Otago, the board charged him with resolving two outstanding issues. One was to get title to the recently created Boiler Point, and the other was to honour the agreement with Ralph to recite the sculptures that were taken down from his studio back on Observation Point. That was the two things that the former CEO had to do. Now, given the MO that we've been experiencing in the last year, through the chair, I would like to ask Mr. Faulkner, what is the board tasked Mr. Winders with? Because quite frankly, Port Otago is now a public health problem in many ways for the people of Port Chalmers. The noise in Kerry's Bay was actually rattling the jars in people's pantries. Through 2GP, they're trying to take away the special designation character of Kerry's Bay. Why? What is Mr. Faulkner, Mr. Ray, etc.? What are they charging Mr. Winders to do? There's lots of very serious issues, and as Lana said, it's much better to cooperate with, to work alongside, and, you know, not to have an MO which is kind of a bit top down. That's all. I'm trying to be civilised about this.
Proud of you.
Just confirming that the noise that you're talking about is from the new Rio bikes. Yeah,
you've heard me over the last few years about the other noise. That still stands, but it's amplified. Like you put earplugs in, and it's actually amplified because it's a low frequency, constant noise.
Okay.
You know, and you go back to the noise model, which a former employee of Port Otago said to me is frankly a joke. But I've said that here as well. The noise model's averaged out. There are LMAXs, but it's not working. It's never been. It needs to be reassessed and re-looked at in a completely impartial way.
With the Rio ships, when I ring, I always ring the same person now, because if you happen to get someone from the gatehouse, you'll get some unusual person, let me say, who will say some stupid comment, and you don't need to be offended while you are ringing up to complain. But the person I ring is respectful, decent, and tells me the truth. He said what they're trying to do is, when the ship comes in, if it's not fully loaded, because it's a refrigerating ship, they cut the motor, the refrigerating thing to half. But of course, once the ship gets loaded, it has to get turned on, and then it becomes wrecked. So on the last night that it's in, it's really humming.
Apparently people in St Leonard, Portobello, everywhere. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not trying to solve their problem. I leave it to them. They've got some good men working down there. And I do think that Kevin is doing his best. But I'm going a bit doolally, not sleeping. Doolally enough to come along here.
Thank you. I wasn't 100% clear about whether the sculptures were actually moved.
Oh,
and that has been resolved.
Oh, yeah, years ago that was resolved by the former CEO. That was one of the things he was tasked with, which was completed. And now there's the Hotary Garden is right by the flagpole there, and then there's Nomi Wilson's house, Ralph's first studio. And also other artists work there, like there's a kiln by Barry Brickell that was one of those ones that goes down a hill. It's an important place for our Māori cultural heritage, for our architectural heritage, our art historical heritage, our, you know, social history of Port Chalmers, actually.
Mm.
Yeah.
And the 2GP was mentioned, is there...
That's a big deal with in terms of...
It's a map process as well.
No, that was the one aspect of the fact that Port Otago had been, through 2GP, trying to take away the designation of Kerry's Bay as an area of special character, which was given to us by the DCC because it is an area of special character. Hence my question to Mr. Faulkner about what have they tasked Mr. Winders to do in Kerry's Bay, because for 40 years, you know, the Kerry's Bay Association was set up 40 years ago because Port Otago had proposed to actually fill in Kerry's Bay from Boiler Point to Rocky Point and make a car park. So our area must be protected. It is an area of special character, and Port Otago grew out to meet us by reclaiming Boiler Point. We've just been living there the whole time. So this is a big issue. We're the people with the reverse sensitivity issue. And we are doing our best to work with Port Otago.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank
for
you.
Move on to presentations, Port Otago. Just take a wee break while we get organised.
Ready to go.
Yeah. Okay, I'd just like to welcome Mr. Winder. I've also got an attendant, Paul Ray. Down the back there, Tom Campbell. Yeah. Welcome, Tom. I think it's not the first time you've been to this council. Welcome along.
Thank you.
One holds a packet from Invercargill Advantage, so welcome. Stephen Connolly here as well. I'm not too sure, maybe others as well. But welcome to you all, and we're in your hands.
Right, and just the other is Craig Usher, our commercial manager. He's quite new to the organisation, so he's just coming along to observe the what's going on. And I'll just add, yeah, Paul Ray is the deputy chairman of Port Otago. Okay. Can we get that going? Right, let's just get straight into it. I know time's limited, so we will be going quite quickly. Health and safety continues to be a high priority of the board, and significant effort and investment has been undertaken in that area, really aimed at making sure all our people go home safely every day. Cruise ships, and I might add Kevin will be expanding on some of these just overall comments that I'm making, but we're well through now a very big cruise ship season. The number of days where we've had to double cruise ships in, and the big ones, it's really been good for the, I'm sure, for the community of Dunedin. It does provide a fair few challenges to the port. Bit of a change by MERS, just the way their ships are rotating around the coast, and that's been of benefit to us. Satisfactory result, that's a sort of financial way of saying it's perhaps not quite as good as we would have liked, but really that, as Kevin will explain, is due to just a few of the exports have been a bit lower in the first half, and we fully expect that to be caught up in the second half. We bought a new dredge, backhoe dredge, and a new barge, and probably you've seen that working in the upper harbour. That really is aimed at being able to do work in the upper harbour where our suction dredge can't work because of the mud. So we're doing quite a bit of catch-up work in that area. And the last but not least, just the completion of the multi-purpose wharf, and that came along just in time because we've had the container ships out on the end there when we've had two cruise ships in the inner berth. So without having that finished this season, we would have had some issues. So that's just a brief summary. There's the Takatai and the Hapuka working in the upper harbour. So that digs the mud out because it can't be sucked out. And that at the moment is going around just picking up a few high points that have built up over the years in that upper harbour. This is a new barge we've bought to go with Takatai. So basically what it can do, it can fill one while the other's getting towed out to the dumping ground. This is only a 5-year-old aluminium barge, and we purchased that in Auckland. So just on to the financial results. And first of all, you can see that revenue was down, and really two parts to that. There weren't any land settlements in the first half of the year from Hamilton, and just with cargo volumes down, our port revenue is down slightly. So that's flowing through to EBITDA and through to the half year result for before tax and after tax result. The financial position is still very, very strong. And there's an increased debt that's gone up a bit, and that really has been due to finishing the multi-purpose wharf, also the ongoing development in Hamilton, both in the land development and some extra buildings we're putting up in that area. But the equity ratio, as you can see, is very consistent and consistently conservative. So it's certainly still in very good financial position. So, very brief overview, and I'll now pass over to Kevin just to fill with a few more details in the individual business units. And you'll have your foot down, won't you?
Yes, I'll go as fast as I can. Thanks, Dave, and welcome. Just an activity measure there is the number of different types of ships we've had in the 6 months, and you can see there, obviously, the container ships, the maroon line, is what you'd expect. It's even because we get four ships a week, so they're reliable. The yellow line, you can see the growth there in the crews that Dave alluded to. And in the blue is the bulk carriers, and that's a mixture of logging bulk carriers through to small fishing boats. So a fair bit of activity, but our volumes are about the same level. So good to see that activity increasing in the first 6 months. And through to the crews specifically, as Dave alluded to, you can see Port Chalmers, we have 39 cruise ships versus 31, so it's a significant increase. Dunedin is only the small cruise ships can get up there, but we've had four instead of two. So around 43 cruise ships through. We're expecting probably about 114 for the year. We've had three missed because of weather. The hot weather has driven this fog, and that's made it a bit difficult to get in. So we should land about there at the moment. Nine left to go for the season. And at half year, we're around about 93,000 passengers through the town. And the proxy for benefit to the city is around about 28 million. So looking forward to a strong second half in cruise, and then investing in the future. Bulk tons just gives you an idea of where our bulk volume comes from. It's the log volumes obviously dominate, and last year was a record log volume year. So to be 4% behind, and there was an issue with shipping in September and October where the log customers couldn't get bulk carriers, so that slowed down volumes a little bit, and it got a bit hot right towards Christmas, so they had to pull the logging gangs out of the forests. So we'd expect that to pick up in the second half, so pretty good first half considering the conditions. This is where the change comes through. You'll see on that top line full exports at 34,000 chew versus 38, and it's down 10%. That's a result of the grass curve. So our business is reliant on Otago and Southland's grass curve. It's been great conditions for farmers, so particularly dairy's about bang on, but the meat guys have been well behind as they carry their lambs, so it's all been a bit late, so that's going to be a second half catch-up, so it's really just timing. And then you'll get down to the bottom there and you see transships volumes, as Dave alluded to. That's when effectively the Maersk bring a ship in. They take the containers off, we put it on the wharf, we hold it there for a number of days and then put it back on their next ship. So it's called a transship, and you see the volumes there are up significantly from 12,002 to 17. And that change only happened in November, so we've only had 2 months of that change, so that is significant. So just taking you through developments in the first half of the year. As Dave said, we've been continuing to invest in critical risk management. That photo there is the work of probably 12 months with our team in the Dunedin depot in Strathallan Street. The investment in hard barriers to keep man and machine separated, and they look like a tennis court net, but effectively they're visual barriers so that our people can be working within that pod, and it's very clear to a machine operator that they can't go into that area. But as you can understand, when the work's done in that pod, they have to strip back the tennis court net, and then the machinery will go in there and remove those containers and replace them with another batch of containers to be worked, and then it's closed up. So it's very safe, and we're really happy with that approach, and I think that's probably the safest and best practice in New Zealand at the moment, and we are rolling that out to Port Chalmers. So we've learnt it at Strathallan Street, our Dunedin depot, and now we're coming down to port and taking the learnings, which is pretty important to us. There's a note there about our side loader fleet. We had a relatively old side loader fleet, so we've upgraded that through the year. We've got two on the water coming here at the moment, due in April, and we've retrofitted fire suppression systems on all our side loaders, so in the event of another fire, we will keep our people safe. So that's been a good investment supported by the board. But ultimately, it comes down to the culture of your people and our leaders. So we invest heavily in ensuring our leadership is in place. And our leaders have to get out in the business and talk, have conversations around what's going on in our business, how we can help our people. And that's proving to be very valuable in learning what we can do better. And obviously engagement, having chats with your people is the way to go. And that leads to a monthly runanga where we get together with unions, staff, leaders, directors, and we discuss all things health and safety in our ones on today for the month. So that's a good opportunity to get aligned. Some of the features of the last 6 months, we've got everyone rolled out in the best practice PPE, as you can see there. Everyone looks the same. It's the best gear we can find, and we continually review that to look for opportunities to keep our people safe. We've rolled out defibrillators to every site, including our floating plant in the event that we have an incident, to look after our people and the wider community, both in Port Chalmers and Kerry's Bay and Arrow Moana. And then obviously there's all the signage and awareness that you need to go through, which we've had a good refresh on that, which is making it very straightforward about entering our sites and what we expect. And then regarding our wellness of our people, the best thing we've done in the last 12 months is to make it smoke-free and work our way through that. So that's a pretty good position for us to be in. So the next step in how we get better and look after our people is we've traditionally had a manual system for rostering all our people. So the board support us in investing in a new IT system, which has just gone live in February. What it allows to do is it allows tracking of patterns and rosters for all our staff. And at the moment, it's been quite a day-by-day rostering system and looking at patterns over weeks and months. There's modern algorithms you can run over data sets that will predict the possible fatigue risks of putting someone on a shift a number of weeks later. So to have the ability to overlay some of those algorithms for us in the future will just give us another opportunity to look after our people. So really looking forward to this getting delivered, and ultimately it allows our team all to have, you know, smartphones and use an app like you'd expect in a modern day environment, which would be really good. So that's a big focus, and we're, you know, I think by June we'll have that pretty much bedded down. So a good step forward for the business. There's the Rio class in question. Clearly, we were really excited when they got announced, because they're a brilliant bit of kit. They're about 10 years old, 73 gross registered tonnage, so big ships, 5,200 TEUs. The 1,250 reefer plugs is fantastic for our fish, meat, cheese customers throughout the province, along with apples. So we were all excited when we heard them announced. They're 286 metres long and 40 metres wide. So that was pretty, fit along the new multi-purpose berth very well, and 40 metres, our cranes can service 40 metres. So we ticked all the boxes, and then got the benefit of 13.5 metres draft, which the previous L-class was going to 14.5 metres, so we were dredging to 14.5 metres. So it enables us to flatten out at 14 metres and stop dredging, which is great in the lower harbour. But they were really disappointed when they turned up and they were noisy. So we've been working with our Maersk when we've got through two rotations of the Rio now, and trying to position them in the right place, and I'll get to that in another slide, but it's a real focus for us at the moment. This is the hubbing change, so it's a bit hard to see here, but this is our Americas service that comes in on Friday, and that's how it used to be up until about November. So it'd come in from Australia into Port Chalmers, then up through the coast, and then out to America. So you think cheese, meat, all beef going to US, fantastic service to get up to Philadelphia and Charleston, and it's a long-running Maersk service. So the change that they've made, this happened in November, so it comes in from Melbourne now and it goes to Timaru, picks up all the cargo from Timaru and brings it down to Port Chalmers and then transships it through Port Chalmers. So the Rio that comes in on a Sunday, effectively a lot of that cargo will come off the transship volumes and go straight onto the Rio and then up to market. So it just means we have to handle those containers twice, one off and one back on. But that's additional volume that we didn't have last year. And that change is a positive thing for Port Chalmers. Just cements us as a hub for Maersk in the future. As Dave said, without that investment of the new wharf, we'd be in real trouble this year with the number of cruise ships. The bigger Rio-class ship that we can put on the multi-purpose now has just enabled our business to have that flexibility for growth. It's not all about Port Chalmers. We have got a big land holding and port in Dunedin. So we've completed an addition for the log customers, 900k investment in hardstand. And it's a bit hard to see on that picture, but effectively where our Icon business used to live down there next to the Enza store and between Fulton Hogan's bitumen plant was our transport operator. And now that is 100% logs. We've freed that up, leveled it off, and that enables both Burnslaw, one from Tapanui based, and Port Blakey, mainly out of Oamaru, Timaru. Those volumes can come through to Port Otago, and we've got 14 trucks off the road and under that scaling operation. It's a very good operation. Just enables us for future growth. And then we obviously there's been long-standing work on asbestos, as we talked to you about last year, and reality is ATL from Wellington have been awarded the contract. They're on site working their way through it and getting through effectively. Hopefully this will play. And this is the ATL group, and those are the Fryer Street sheds in question. So they started in March, and November, and it's been completed.
So what's the ATL group?
It's just a specialist asbestos removal company out of Wellington. When we went to tender, they were clearly the best on a functional spec, and they were very competitively priced. And they've got a reputation of going around New Zealand and doing the hard jobs. So we think they're a very good operator, and they did a great job here, I think. Minimal disruption, and they were very, very prompt, and no safety issues at all. And there's a quick run through pulling the sheets of asbestos down inside the building, treating them inside the building, and then effectively dealing with asbestos after that. Given it coming to a position where the site's deemed to be clean, and once it was clean, and certified by two assessors, the demolition crew came through, and those that are around Dunedin saw how quickly it came down. It was a very quick process. And we've ended up with a clean wharf. We've still got to do some remedial work to it to make sure it's safe for the public. And then once we've completed that, we'll enable it for the public. But the best thing about that investment we've made to complete it in March is that it enables that to now proceed. So it's a good position to be in. I've been a good neighbour. Coming back to this issue around noise, just to explain, the thump, thump, thump noise in the Rio is an issue. We've been working with Maersk and our noise consultants, Marshall Day, to get a best option to run the ship. We've moved it from the CT site to the multi-purpose because we're finding that's a better mitigation. And it's about running one generator on the berth sites. When we first got the ships in, they were running two. But it is heavily dependent on the weather, the outside weather. The hotter the temperature is at summer, they have to run cooling and ventilation fans to keep the engine room cool enough so the engine doesn't go above temperature like in your car. So while they're doing that, it allows the noise to escape out through the ventilation vents. So if you think of winter, all the vents will be closed up, and the sound will be more contained in the ship. So we've done the work around how quiet it is when it's all closed up compared to open, and it is a significant difference. So we're just working with Maersk to get that as the standard operating procedure for every Rio ship, and we've had two so far come through on under that sort of quiet mode, and we're working with all the data on weather and wind conditions because they have a massive impact of where that sound travels to.
So the yellow and red zones, what that Lana was talking about, can you explain off the air anything about that?
Yeah, there's a sound regime that we are required to reset every year. It looks at the average noise, and there's a calculation done, and Marshall Day do an independent analysis and then repaint effectively three lines, which is a red zone, a yellow zone, and a blue zone. And that determines what houses we have to go and approach to acoustically treat as part of our noise regime. So as part of the Rio being in port, that data's been updated, and we will update our noise contours as a result of the Rio. So we're working our way through that now. And ultimately, if we have to increase the number of homes that we have to acoustically treat as by the noise contours, that will be a requirement for us to do. Okay?
What does cold ironed mean?
Oh, sorry. Cold ironed is very few ports in the world, Alaska and some of the fjords, have the ability to plug a ship into power while it's on the berth, therefore removing the requirement to run engines. And that is mainly for emissions management. And unfortunately, the Rio does not have a plug, is the way to think of it. So even if we had the electrical infrastructure at Port Chalmers to plug the ship in, it can't be plugged in. and the Rio class consumes as much power or generates as much power as Port Chalmers does in its own right. So it's a massive electrical load. So we'd probably have significant upgrades required to do that, not just for us, but Aurora Delta.
Thank you.
We're making progress with our public Border Point fishing jetty, and we expect to be building that. We've got our piles in. We've been working through tender process to get the costings right. We expect to have that up through the middle of the year, so that's just an update on where we're going there. Thorney Beach, obviously the DCC has come to the party with its $900,000 investment in the reserve, which is pretty much that plan's getting finalised, and we're at a position where we're just doing final detailed drawings on the our groin design that will then go in through our resource consent, which we will be lodging this year, and then waiting consent to proceed. So making progress in that project, which is good. And then we've got just the usual where we support. Obviously, supporting the Wildlife Hospital is a key initiative for us, the HALO project, and a number of other initiatives, along with just us being able to help out the community where we can. That's the Quarantine Island wharf that we our team went out there and repiled and looked after, just to give them a hand. So typical Water Target, just trying to help out. And then on Monday, we've got an open day to allow our neighbours and our staff to come along and open our doors and come into the port. First one we've done. Fingers crossed for the weather. It's looking like it could be rain, so hopefully that'll go away. But good opportunity for showcase what we do, allow people to walk along the wharf, see our equipment up firsthand, and an opportunity to discuss noise and any other issues with me, and I'll be there. So we're looking forward to that on Monday. Okay. So over to Chalmers.
Okay, so Chalmers Properties, just a brief summary there. Their rental income of the for the income is pretty much as we'd expect, a little bit up with the renegotiation of rents. We're underway up in Tarapa with the construction of a building for lease to New Zealand Windows, and we're doing a similar one near adjacent to it, and we've actually got very good interest in that also. So we're retaining some of the land there with buildings on it, which are going in for long-term lease. We're also starting civil works on the 1.8 hectare site we have free in Auckland. It's next to a container yard there, and there's good interest in taking those properties or that property up as well and through a leased building. So just the portfolio split. It is changing slightly. We are selling down some Dunedin properties, and there's some areas there that are sort of outside our longer term needs. So we've had a few sales there, so you can see the maroon bit there is dropping. Auckland's staying reasonably the same, and Hamilton's increasing a bit with investment in developed land plus the buildings that we're putting into the area there. To Rapa Gateway, there's just, you know, we're getting close to sort of the completion there and well advanced of stages 3, 4, and 5. 8.4 hectares, we want to get ready to get titles because basically the day that the titles go out, that triggers the payment of about $30 million to us. So we're very keen to see that come in before the end of June. And that is, that's the target at the moment. It's going to be difficult to do that, but we're pushing. If it's not 30th of June, it will be soon thereafter, but it would be nice to be in this financial year. And there's a further 3.3 hectares already contracted for settlement in the following year. And just the progress that we've made over there, 44.5 hectares in Tarapa for development. And it's only after we've finished the current works, there's only 3.5 hectares to be completed. So we're getting well through it. Just looking forward, as Kevin said, I think the second half of the year will be a much stronger than what we've had in the first. The logs, dairy, meat and apples will all sort of start coming through. Kevin did talk about the MERS change. That has been disrupted for about 15 weeks where they've had to bring a ship into Nelson that will take a wee bit of that work, those containers away from Timaru that have been coming south, but that is only for the Nelson apple season. Second half bulk cargoes, you know, as I said, we can expect those to continue on. 114, 115 cruise ships will come in this year, again, dependent on weather, and, you know, 250,000 odd passengers that are cruising around through Port Chalmers and down into Dunedin is very good for the region. And Te Rapa, yeah, we're very much on track for getting stages 3 and 5 all finished and get those settlements through, and we'll be certainly looking at doing that last 3.5 hectares pretty quickly as well. And continuing on, well, we're on track to have the Port Otago-owned land asbestos-free by June 9, 2019. Thank you very much.
Thank you, through the Chair. Mr. Winders, good morning. Good morning to you. I just want to ask you, of that 44.5 hectares you have up north, was there any of it that you weren't actually able to use? You know, was there land that has been unusable, or have you had to do other things with it? You know, has the whole lot of it, or the whole chunk of it, been able to be what you want, you know, made of it or developed of it? I just was thinking as I was listening to you.
Well, it's not all land for sale. There's
right.
Obviously roads.
Yes.
There's some drainage areas and things like that. So, you know, the 44 hectares in terms of saleable land. Is the 44 hectares saleable land? That actually is the saleable land. So the total hop, I think it was close to 60,
yeah.
But the rest is taken up with the roads. And normally a yield in, say, in residential, I know, is 80%. In industrial, it's probably a little bit higher because there's less reserves and things like that. But there's roads and there's certainly quite big swale areas,
right.
Where and stormwater detention ponds.
Yes.
So that takes up the difference between, say, roughly 60 and the 44.5 we've got for sale.
Thank you. And I do have another question, if I may. Thank you. It's only because you're here and I get a chance. Thank you. With your transshipping, you talk about that, you know, you've got the big changes that are coming in. Are there any additional or new health and safety measures that you have to look for because this is a whole complete change?
There has been some challenges because effectively what we do is we typically a normal ship comes in, we're taking an import off or an empty off, and you're putting it off, taking it off the ship, and then you're placing it into the yard for further processing, then, you know, obviously washed, repaired and out to customers. Or the reverse, where it comes, a typical export will come in the gate or come in by rail, and you're taking it off, putting it on power, putting it in a stack, and then you're planning for the ship to come in a week's time. With transships, you're effectively taking them off the ship on a Friday. We typically use the wharf or close to the wharf area to put them in a place so we don't have to put them in the yard. So it did take us a bit of work to actually plan that and organise it because of a big change. And then effectively, the process of picking up a container and pulling off the ship and then moving it around is very similar. It's just effectively that planning element required a lot more work.
It's like a holding pen almost, isn't
yeah,
it?
That's yeah, that's a good way to think
yeah.
of it. Transitional for 3 days.
Yeah.
And we can do that in our port because we've only effectively got four main container vessel visits a week. If you had a highly constrained port with seven, you know, container ships coming a week, one a day, you wouldn't have any spare real estate to be able to deal with the trenches. So it's efficient use of what we've got. So it's a nice bonus for us to have.
And the wharf, new wharf's the trump card, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes, no, thank you. Over the years, the port has, you know, provided some really good reports. I must say that today is a bit more of a mixed bag for me, to be honest. From a financial perspective, it gets a tick. From an infrastructure perspective, it gets a tick. Health and safety, so there's a lot of good things, and you're delivering on a lot of things that we're asking you to do. So, you know, well done. There's obviously some issues in the background, you know, the public forum. You would have witnessed that. We've talked about the noise issue, and I can see that you're taking that seriously. I mean, it takes time, but nevertheless, from the community's perspective, the ship comes into port and makes a hell of a lot of noise, so there's, you know, there's that whole time period of having to put up with it. So and the word cooperation was raised, and so my question to you really is, you know, are there some cooperation issues in terms of, for example, the union building? I witnessed firsthand that there seemed to be not as much cooperation as I would have thought would have occurred, or goodwill or communication. There certainly seemed to be a communication issue where the union were in one corner and the port was in the other, and there didn't seem to be a lot of good constructive communication or compromise happening. What's your response to that in terms of you want to be a good citizen, that's in your values? I mean, how are you going to manage that in the future? I mean, my personal view is that there is a communication issue, and I'd welcome your response to that.
Right, well, perhaps we just start with the noise. And I just want to reiterate how disappointed that the port is with the new ships and the noise they're making. Prior to their arrival, I think there'd been very good progress made in the noise management in terms of monitoring and what was going on, etc. And you know, we got pretty short notice, of only a matter of weeks, that the Rio was coming. And we were generally excited about it because of all the features of it. And there was never any mention of noise, because from what we've been told, because we've obviously asked them, they've never had a problem with noise in any other port. But that's what they're telling us. So when it turned up and boom, 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 we were as disappointed as everyone else. And the team have spent a lot of time trying to find out how we can mitigate that to the best possible, or the lowest possible level. And that's where we are. We're working through that process. There's still a few things to try. We've had Marshall Day, and so we're looking forward to seeing what it's done to those noise contours. And you know, as I say, just all I can say, we're doing everything we possibly can to mitigate that noise. As far as the building goes, I believe that Kevin has spent a lot of time talking to the union about options that we had for, you know, with that building to be demolished. And there has been a lot of communication. There's been a lot of options were put up for allowing an office for the union to occupy, a place for them to have meetings. All that sort of thing was put up. It was fair to say it was probably rejected out of hand. And really, we sort of got to the last resort where we have had to proceed because, you know, that building is a risk. And as directors sitting there, if that fell down on someone, well, unfortunately, it's me that's in the gun, other people sitting around this table. So we do have to have a fairly hardline approach to it. Does that answer the question?
It certainly doesn't answer the question. I mean, that's the response that's been trickled out over time. I mean, what actually happened, my understanding, was that a compromise option was broken, but the perception in the community was that the port wouldn't listen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm average first interim report, but I'm sure the product flows will come later in the season and we'll end up with a brilliant result, and good stuff there. I reiterate some of Councillor Scott's comments on a lot of good work happening. I'm intrigued at there's no other noise issues in other ports and what the difference is in Port Chalmers for the Rio class ships, whether it is a climatic, geographic, just trying to think about a way forward for you and the community.
Yeah, well, certainly the first port I thought that would have a similar issue would be Napier. You know, Napier Port, and there's a hill right behind it and all that, and I know they do have noise complaints. No complaints. So it is surrounded by, you know, Port Otago is surrounded by the hills. It seems to be containing the sound. And in certain weather conditions worse than others, and that's the only explanation we can come up with. Maersk only have owned, or they have never owned up to it, but some of the captains have said they've had a problem in Hamburg and
Rotterdam.
They seem to be the only other two ports in the world that they have had these complaints with. But I think it also comes back to the background noise. Port Otago, you know, Port Chalmers, is quite a quiet area other than the port, I might add. So, you know, that's when Lyttelton, there's a lot going on around the port. Auckland, there's always a lot of noise going on in the background around there. But at night time down at Port Otago, there's only one activity going on. There's two, the sleeping, hopefully, and also the port operations. So that's the only explanation that I can sort of come up with, which puts us a wee bit different to all the other ports it calls in the world.
Yeah, thank you for the quality and the clarity of your reporting. It's up to your very high standards. Much appreciated. I'm intrigued by the fact that Observation Point, Flagstaff Hill, call it what you will, has come back onto your plate as a significant issue with your community, as we heard from Milana and Mary at the start. It takes me right back to when I first came to Dunedin and joined Trevor Plumley and Marshall Seifert in the battle to save Observation Point. And that was quite a pitch political battle back in the Cliff Skeggs period. I wonder whether any of us who are around this table who are interested in what's happening there, why it's happening there, what the consequences will be for the various art facilities and memorabilia that are still on that point, could come out and have a look and talk with the people involved, particularly the company's people involved, why you're doing this work, what the outcome will be for you and what it will be for the community, what will happen to those facilities, like the various studios and the Hortery Garden and so on. I would very much like to have the chance to come out and visit with anybody that you nominate and just talk through it all, because I hate to think that there is risk, again, to those important relics of Otago's art history. It's a noble story, and I don't want it chipped away at in any way at all. Would that be a possibility? And preferably on a Sunday night, so we can hear the boom, boom, boom as well.
There's no reason why we couldn't do that. Well, I think that's a good idea. You know, that has been off. That issue has been off the agenda for certainly most of the time I've been chairman,
yeah,
I believe. And then all of a sudden, it seems to have come back.
That's
so
what bothers me.
Perhaps we can arrange something like that,
yeah,
just to bring those that are interested up to date with what the issues are.
Yeah,
and on site is probably the best way.
Exactly. That's what I'd really appreciate. And anybody else around the table who wants to do that as well, that would be great. Maybe you and I could liaise, Kevin, on
yep,
a suitable time and place.
Great. Two questions. The first is just drilling into that thing about noise. You've said you've done everything that you can to mitigate the noise. Obviously, it's been unsuccessful to date. What does a solution look like?
Just to clarify, we are still doing things. We haven't exhausted everything yet. We're still trying to improve the situation. In solution.
How are you trying to do that?
Sorry?
How are you trying to do that?
Well, again, coming back to the number of generators and the need to have the ventilators opening, that's the bit which seems to be the thing that can be controlled by the ship. So we're working around that. We're at the worst time of the year where the temperatures require all those vents open. And if once the temperatures start cooling down a bit, if they can keep those closed longer, there will be a significant reduction in noise.
Have Maersk accepted that there is an issue, and are they prepared to change the way in which they operate to satisfy this need?
Well, they're cooperating as much as they possibly can with doing this. So there's cooperation from Maersk. They're certainly not going out of their way to make it noisy. They're going out of their way to mitigate it as much as possible.
The second question I have is around the Chalmers property portfolio. You said you were selling off some of your assets now are in Dunedin, and the now reduced Chalmers property to 47% of the portfolio. Why?
Around this table, over the years, there's been quite a bit of pressure to sell some of that land. So, we've responded, and when we say we're selling it with the criteria of to owners who want to do redevelopment, but with the leasehold land, they can't actually do the redevelopment. They want a longer tenure. So we actually have a checklist of about 10 items like that before we agree to sell.
So it's not a loss of confidence in the Dunedin.
Far from it. No, and it's the, you know, I think just all the land we've sold, the people who have bought it tend to be the leaseholders who have been there for years, and they now want to redevelop and reinvest in the area, but they're not prepared to do so while it's leasehold land.
So when you sell that land,
yes,
do you invest that return or the income that you receive from that sale back into the property portfolio?
Goes into the property portfolio. For instance, the CHEP building which we built. So you know, that's an, you know, we've reinvested more in that area where we've built the CHEP building. We've leased that, so that sort of thing goes in. We don't specifically say that sits in Dunedin, but it goes into the development of Chalmers properties as a whole.
Thanks for coming along today. I guess having only sat here for not very long, and other people have sat here for a lot longer, and hearing more community concerns, the bigger question comes to mind, and really society is completely addicted to growth. We're convinced that technology will save these issues, you know, solve these problems. We've currently got a government who's talking about, you know, the needing to look at both economic activity alongside well-being. In terms of current mental state of people living in a place where you can't sleep because of noise, I think it's not just the current problems, but you mentioned again in your presentation the opportunities for expansion in the future. And I'm sure the concern of having to continue to fight a organisation who has a lot more power and money than the community does forever and a day is also just as concerning as not being able to sleep right now. And so I think as an community owned and run organisation as the council is, and as a subsidiary, at some stage we're going to need to ask the question, what are the limits to growth? And when do we call it quits on trying to continue to expand and impact our communities? Has the question ever been raised around the table, you know, do we want the Rio? What's enough of, you know, what are enough boats? What are enough cruise ships? What's the criteria? When do we say, that's okay, we'll stop now?
Okay, well, just the latter point there, the restraint on growth at Port Otago is very geographic because there's no more room. So the ability for us to grow the business is very much restricted by what is there, and that is that's quite a big constraint. The ships coming in, you know, unfortunately the shipping lines decide what ship comes in. We're so as disappointed as everyone else that we've got a noisy one, and we're doing everything we can to mitigate that for the good of the community. And I think that, you know, we've done a lot of work with the community over the past couple of years, particularly to mitigate and to be a better neighbour. And I think that is unfortunately just been lost by this one very noisy ship that has unexpectedly turned up.
Unexpectedly turned up. They're scheduled on your, you know. We are able to stop those ships. So when do we say the ship is no longer okay to have at this port?
Well, as a shareholder, I think that would be your call, but that would be a very difficult one for you to make.
Yes, well, we like making difficult decisions.
Just going back to the noise for a moment, my understanding is, just really want to clarify this, is that with these new boats, they're a bit noisier, you're working on how to quieten them. That is the first stage of a bigger picture. The next part of that, but now this is not a statement, it's kind of a question. The next part of that picture being that you then recontour the town, and then you proceed to work in the town on the same basis as you already have over a long period, and you treat those parts of the town that require it in the manner that you have in the past. Is that correct?
That would be the final result.
That's right. So effectively it is a two-stage process. Mitigate, and if we can't, what's the impact, and how do we mitigate it on shore? Mitigate it on the boat, then try to mitigate it on shore. Okay, thank you.
It's a fair summary.
Yes, thanks very much for a very good and comprehensive report. We've become used to seeing them and seeing the growth of the port, whether Councillor Lawton likes growth or not. I do appreciate that we operate in a very competitive environment, and Port Otago has done very well. And you must be incredibly disappointed with this noise issue, because you and we have been preparing for these big boats for a long time, and had we not been preparing for them, we probably wouldn't be the port we are today. Interesting thing is, I can hear, and I live on the far side of the Otago Peninsula, and I can still hear the boat. It's not noisy enough for me to be terribly annoying, but, and lots of people, I heard someone say Portobello's affected. Yes, they are.
Yes.
And lots the side of the peninsula. And I don't pretend for a moment that it's an easy issue to get around. That aside, one of the things I want to know, you said there was three cruise ships didn't come in through weather events, that right? Which is pretty good. We've had years where there's been more than that.
Yes.
Is there any truth in the rumour that one ship actually wasn't a weather event? Some controversy over asbestos?
No, I think that's conspiracy theory.
Told me is it rather a conspiracy theory?
No, not that I'm aware. There was one cruise ship that didn't get out of Brisbane because of the cyclone in the Tasman. It never made it on its journey at all, so it missed all the ports. And then there's three that's been held up through weather. So that's my understanding.
Okay, I think that's it. So thank you very much. It's been a comprehensive report.
Thank you.
Thanks,
James. Oh, that's not one.
Well done.
Yep. I don't know why that is.
Quite right. We'll move on to confirmation of the moving on to 10.2, port ownership review. This is a high-level paper to consider the terms of reference and point of process for a proposed review of Council 100% ownership of Port Otago Limited. Unfortunately, Mr. Donnelly can't be here today, but I think the terms of reference are pretty self-explanatory, really. Is there any comment on this paper? Councillor Woodhead?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and you've introduced it as a high-level review. Yes, Port Otago is a strategic asset for this council, and it's appropriate from time to time to ask this question. And I think it was decided at last year's long-term plan, and that we seek a suitable consultant, council company or the likes, to run through all the information as outlined in the request for proposal here in the terms of reference, and just have the conversation.
Yep. No, look, we've asked for this, and so this is what it is. But I make a number of points. Firstly, I think in parallel to this, I would be interested to know what does this council or what does our community need, have a particular need to spend money on in terms of, like, if we sell shareholding, you know, are we then just going to look for a course or is it going to just fit into our long-term plan? You know, is there a projected shortfall in our long-term plan that this money is actually needed for? You know, so in parallel to that, I'd be interested to know what are the obligations, what are the opportunities in terms of for a quantum of money in the future for our community, for this council, and at the same time, I think I've read it elsewhere, but just a summary of our financial situation, our reserves, you know, so what shortfall do we currently have to achieve those things? So to me, it's a key part of the question, but there's other parts to the question. No sense thinking it's Christmas and...
Well, it probably alludes to that a bit, you know, the opportunities that may arise. You know.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm not talking about the opportunities that may arise. I'm talking about, you know, what are the opportunities that we identify at this point. You know, I mean, there's no sense selling part of a port if we've got this quantum of money and we don't actually need it.
Isn't Councillor Scott getting ahead of the game?
Yes.
We're not at that point.
As I mentioned earlier, it is a high-level paper.
Yeah.
To the start of the process.
Yeah.
Councillor Lawton.
On to my previous sort of being an owner than just facilities to our community. Alongside each of these models of how much ownership we hold, we also have voting rights and some, although I'd say, you know, considered minor, but actually we have a significant opportunity to change the course of the future of the port for the betterment of our entire community, as I mentioned, not just financial. So I do think that needs to be considered when we're looking at different ownership models. So I'd like to expand it to the economic, social and environmental outcomes for that organisation, given that we have a lot stronger community mandate than does a run-of-the-mill corporate. Okay, included in the terms of reference. I would like an amendment to that. Yep. Each ownership model should include, so if it was in point four, alignment of each model to the financial strategy. Well, it's not just the financial strategy, it's the financial, social and environmental. In fact, I'd add another point, sorry. Point six. Each ownership model should include consideration of the social and environmental of the regional council. Yep, so point D6.
Yeah.
I don't think we are. If we're spending money on having consultants come in and write reports for us, we might as well have them consider something other than just our financial output, which is definitely more than the role that we play with this organisation as a court.
Yeah, look, I was just wondering whether the influence of the regional council is the thing that we then push back into these proposals once,
yes.
Once we know what they are.
I'm making the suggestion that we simply want to know implication rather than how we can influence. I think that's the bit that's getting ahead. So we want to know, I support the broader context, but I think it is those implications. And of course, you know, one of the things being if we sold it to somebody we didn't know tomorrow, then can we be sure how much control we're going to have over them and the community, and what things would we, what levers would the community be able to pull in those cases? So that's the implication, and I think that's really important for us to know those things. And I just wondered whether the Councillor Lawton would like to consider that.
To change the word influence.
To just the implications of those.
Yeah, I
think that would be great.
This is a huge issue. We're talking the privatisation or partial privatisation of Port of Otago here. And it's funny how we sort of gloss over that, because it is a massive issue. Stephen, I'm very disappointed that your private correspondence to us is not part of this paper, for example. You raised some very good points, and I think they are points worthy of consideration by this council. And, for example, the specific issue that you raise around the opportune time to withdraw a sum of capital over several years from Port of Otago surely should be part of this discussion around the terms of reference. And so I'd hate to see your thoughts disappear into the ether while we head off down the lines of should we employ consultants to review ownership. My understanding is that you want to include that suggestion in this terms of reference, but I don't see them in the paper. Is that correct?
That's correct, and I'll come to that in a moment.
You're going to move an amendment to that?
Yeah.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
Suggest some discussion.
The second thing I just want to say is that, of course we should do it. Of course we should review ownership. Of course we should see if it's working properly for us. And of course, no sale at all will occur without public consultation, so that's a long way down the line before we even get to that particular hurdle or fence. But nonetheless, I think we should admit that we are questioning the current structure as whether or not it is the most appropriate ownership structure for today and tomorrow and for generations to come. And so I will certainly support this on that basis. But I would like us to give some further thought to the terms of reference. We've just made a horrendous mistake, which I will be highlighting, around the terms of reference of the consents review. A massive mistake that almost voids that review. So I want to make sure that we have a little bit of time to think further around this terms of reference. And Stephen's got an amendment. Ella's got an amendment. I've only seen this paper in the last 2 days. I wonder if it's possible for us to give us some thought, further thought around this, and then to make a final deliberative decision at the council meeting in 2 weeks' time.
A couple of things. Firstly, I think we need to be very careful, and a couple of councillors have already mentioned this, that we don't get too far ahead of ourselves. So this is not investigating the option to sell part or a portion of. The way I interpreted the conversations that occurred last year was that it's understanding the benefits we have from the ownership of Port Otago. And it's time, as we own it 100%, and it's a strategic asset, and it's time to have a look. We certainly haven't had a look and asked that question in the 15 years I've been on this council. And we need to enter that process with an open mind. There's no predetermination in my mind about any options. And we might ratify status quo and get on with it. Some of the comments being made, I think, are more discussions for things like statement of corporate intent. And where we talk with the port company about how they operate, how they manage growth, how they plan for the future, etc., rather than through this process. With reference to my my paper, it was just a, I see it in, as it's spelled out in the paper, just an opportunity. Now, whether it's appropriate to plug it into here or not, I'm not too sure. It might be, we might be getting ahead of ourselves even with that conversation. It might be a conversation for further down the track once we see this outcome from this high-level report. But I wondered whether it was an opportune time for the consultants to look at the ability to withdraw a lump of capital due to the financial position the port is in, is one of the things to look at in the terms of reference. And so that's why I thought it was timely that I socialised that with councillors. But yeah, I just want to be very clear that you know, it's a pretty high level look. There's no predetermination about any changes as such. We've got this asset that's worth over $500 million, and we're the 100% owners on behalf of the region. Let's understand how the benefits of that have stacked up over the years, and get an assessment of it. So yeah, and there's some options there in the terms of reference.
Just agree with all that, and yes, it is just a broad overview. But I wanted to lend some weight to what Councillor Lawton was saying as well. I believe that if you're going to be looking at the ownership model, it does say there advantages and disadvantages of each model. Well, it's fairly obvious that if you sell it down or you aren't majority shareholder, then your influence on a whole range of things is very different. So I do think that comes into advantages and disadvantages. And the yes, statement of corporate intent and how we expect the port to behave will be very different if we're not majority shareholder, for example. So it's not just something that comes in later on with statement of corporate intent. For example, we've heard just previously how Chalmers Properties operated for the greater development of Dunedin. It's not for the whims at the time of a few investors who want to on-sell how we manage that property at the moment. So those types of opportunities are important to look at, the socio-economic and the environmental advantages and disadvantages of each model should come into it. They're really important, not just for that, for the producers in Otago, Southland, South Canterbury as well. The way we operate the port's really crucial. So it's a broader picture. Agree, it could just be a brief look at what are the returns, how much more could we pull out of this, what would it do to the company, what would it look like under each ownership model? But I think we're missing an opportunity if we do that, and it's not something that would take a great deal more to plug in. So I'd like to lend weight to Councillor Lawton's amendment. Thank you.
Question, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question? I've just listened to the chairman, but then I'm looking at clause 8AC. And that says an overview of ownership models that could be considered for Port of Otago,
yep,
which clearly indicates that you're looking at selling it. And it's not just a discussion about, you know, what's been and value to. It's a pretty serious, and it's not quite high level when you start doing that. At which point you sort of start to ask the question, and again I come back to that terms of reference issue, Stephen. Well, what's the market value going to be? And that's not in any of those terms of reference. If you were going to sell it down, what would be the potential revenue gain that you could invest in some, say, environmental projects in the region as a consequence of diluting your shareholding? So that's not there in that terms of reference at all. We're talking about scenarios of ownership, but not what the values of that those scenarios might be in any detail.
Yeah. Well, I actually think we're getting ahead of ourselves here.
Well, that's why I'm asking about the terms of reference, though.
Yeah. So just respond to it. I think that's a separate block of work, and it would probably be a different bunch of individuals. Based on the answer from the first review and further consultations.
Around this table, we say that a lot. We're getting ahead of ourselves, and that's just a block of work. Unfortunately, what we tend to do is go into these things without a plan for what we're ultimately trying to do, and we get presented with small amounts of information without a context, which means that we're not... Of course, we end up in these conversations, which seem incredibly inefficient, because we haven't got a clear identification of what we're actually trying to do. If we think that this is only a subset of the work, why haven't we seen the entire work program for what we're trying to achieve for this? It's really frustrating, and we are frustrating ourselves, and we talk about this. We just go round and round in circles. So I'm happy to include or not include whatever bits we think we need to have in here, but I agree actually with Councillor Laws on this one. Maybe we need to sit on it, figure out what it is that the end goal is in terms of the overall pieces of work that we want to see for this, and then figure out exactly what the terms of reference are for the first step. Because we, all the time, we get really confused about what we're actually trying to achieve, and then by the time we get to the last report or making a decision, we realise we've missed a step because we haven't thought about it strategically.
I think we need to have somebody, through you, Mr. Chairman, come in here to take us through that and facilitate us through that. I've been involved with community take or selling down shares. I'll take you back to the Target Trust Bank, which I was a trustee of. We sold 25% of that capital first. We put it on the stock exchange because we needed to increase the capital adequacy of the bank. And then later on, the whole shareholding was sold off through selling to Westpac. Pioneer Generation's another case where through change of government's policies on what power boards could own, etc., we had to sell our line network. To get that value, the answer to that was we had to put it out to a tender process to find out what it was really worth. We got somebody in and told us what they thought it was worth, and it actually ended up being five times. We actually got paid five times more than what we were told it was worth. So, I mean, we can rattle around here, but what we've got to do is actually find out where we're heading, why we want the money, and all the reasons, and then we need to develop a thinking pattern around what I'm just saying.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Whilst I don't disagree with Councillor Robertson and Councillor Lawton, on the issues that Councillor Lawton in particular raised, I as a councillor do know exactly what I want on this issue, and whilst I'm not against a review, in no way, and I want to be on record as having said this, in no way will I be a part to selling down any part of Port Otago.
Okay. Further comment? If not, I put the recommendation, and I put it in the basis that the paper is taken as a whole and with the focus on the terms of reference.
Can I foreshadow a motion, Mr. Chairman, then?
I'm happy to second your recommendation.
And the foreshadow I would have is that this matter lie on the table until the full council meeting in 2 weeks' time, by which time we would have had further time to think about the terms of reference and have a much more engaged conversation.
Second for that. It's a foreshadowing of a motion. Second by Councillor Lawton. Okay, we'll take the staff recommendation first, which I move. Second by Councillor Lawton. All those in favour, please say aye.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Sorry, before that, now, with respect to Councillor Lawton's amendment, which would significantly broaden the terms of reference here, that is included?
Yeah, that's why I made the comment in terms of take the paper as a whole and focus on the terms of reference. That's why I made that comment.
long as it's there.
Because it's in there now. It's
okay.
Moving the paper as a whole. Is that all right?
Good.
Yeah. All right, all those in favour, please say aye.
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 Against, carried.
No. No.
No.
Okay.
No.
Can I have my objection noted, please?
Okay. Could I ask for a division then, Mr. Chair?
I've said the motion's been passed, and I'll take it as that. I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Chairman, under standing orders, I'm sorry. If a division is asked for after the chairman's call, then that's automatic. You have to do
okay,
it.
Okay, we'll call for a division. All those in favour, please.
Hang on.
Well,
can we have to hear the motion again then, please? If that's the case.
The motion of the paper be taken as a whole with a focus on terms of the reference paper. Terms of reference.
That's the staff recommendation.
I was seconding the staff recommendations. Reports received, notes, amendments that require a process in terms of reference, and approves the proposed process in terms of reference.
All those in favour of the recommendation, raise their hand.
I hope that when we get to the next stage, we'll have a broader understanding of what the overall process looks like.
Councillor Laws, is there a motion?
No, the foreshadow. Oh, are you actually going to? Oh, okay. Then I'd foreshadowed the motion if that one was lost.
Yeah.
That's correct. But that motion was passed, so you've decided not to defer this matter for another 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I voted for the motion. Thank you.
Okay, as I mentioned earlier, we've pressed the time today. I'll see that item finished. Councillor Woodhead, we adjourn.
We probably have to adjourn. Continuation of Finance and Corp until tomorrow afternoon would be my suggestion, Mr. Chair. We do need to stick to these other timeframes.
Mm-hmm.
Either that or we carry on Finance and Corp and have communications tomorrow, but again, I guess there's no guarantee we'll finish Finance and Corp.